deal with an issue that's been a major problem. It was a kind of a topic of discussion that came up at a field hearing for the House Ag Committee as they put together a field hearing right in kind of Fargo-Moorhead about 3 weeks ago. And North Dakota Congressman Kevin Cramer, Minnesota's Colin Peterson, and South Dakota's Kristi Noem were there, and they held the feet to the flames of the NRCS about the big backlog of wetland determinations, especially like in South Dakota. There's like a 3-year wait. And so that issue is hopefully one step closer to resolution. Joining us now is North Dakota Congressman Kevin Cramer. Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Mick.
Hey, this morning you guys kind of went into action. You introduced some legislation to address that issue.
We did. Congresswoman Noem of South Dakota and Congressman Peterson, of course, of Minnesota, and I introduced our bill that we've been working on for some months, but needed to iron out a couple of things and drop the bill to try to put a little more of the power in the hands of the farmer, if you will, and give the bureaucracy some, build in some discipline in the bureaucracy so that these wetland delineation processes don't have to take months to years to several years, as you pointed out. And it was the result of a hearing that we had in Moorhead here a few weeks ago that the three of us and a couple of our colleagues, other colleagues joined us at, and I think it's about time, I'd say. We've been hearing a lot from farmers that have been waiting far too long for the process of wetland determinations and delineations. So it's like I said, it's about time, and I think it's a step in the right direction.
All right. How will the bill that you're introducing work to streamline that?
Yeah, a couple of things. First thing it does is it puts the burden of proof on the government instead of the landowner. At this point, when you go to NRCS or you go to request a delineation and you somehow have to prove that something's a wetland or not a wetland on your own land as opposed to the government, this is going to turn that. And that's a pretty big flip. The second thing it does is it puts a shot clock on the bureaucrats. So if they don't make the determination within 60 days, or at least have a really good reason for not doing it, and an evidence-based reason that they can cite, then the default goes to the benefit of the landowner. The third thing it does, probably one of the bigger things, and this is how it should help the NRCS itself, and that is it provides an opportunity for the farmer to hire a third-party entity. Maybe it's an engineering firm or an environmental engineer firm or something like that that does this as a consulting firm or a consultant, and then they would do the work that NRCS would do, but they do it at the farmer's expense. So if the landowner wants to expedite the process, get his own people, that are trained and that are already pre-approved by the NRCS, then that would greatly reduce the timeline and give, again, more of the power, if you will, to the landowner rather than the bureaucracy. So pretty significant reforms.
Indeed. And maybe
the other thing it does is it puts due process in it. At this point, Mick, this is true of so many of the federal agencies, and there was a major Supreme Court case that just was settled here about a month ago involving Hawks up in Grand Forks and the Corps of Engineers. And Hawks, the company, received an 8-0 unanimous decision in favor of them versus the Obama administration with regard to due process. And what I mean by that is, so oftentimes, if you're seeking a permit or a certificate from a federal agency, they require you to exhaust all of your options before the agency, before you can go to court. And as you know, in some cases, that can be months, if not years, and it can include hundreds of thousands of dollars of fees. Our bill requires or allows the farmer to go immediately to federal court or to district court if they choose to, if they get an unfavorable ruling. So, again, it puts a lot more of the power in the hands of the landowner.
Excellent. All right. Now, could, though, the best part of this bill be the shot clock?
Well, that's a pretty big deal. I think you were at the hearing.
Yes.
In Moorhead. And one of the things, and you referenced it in leading up to this, one of the problems is that the years that it takes, the backlog, which is huge, and that may or may not be the fault of a person that works for the government or whatever the case might be. It might just be they're overwhelmed with work. But by allowing a third party, a certification consulting firm to be hired by the farmer and the shot clock, you really do sort of build in a discipline that's required. And you might recall one of the state NRCS directors even said that they're trying to get their process down to 30 days. So we made it 60 days. And as you know, if a farmer today was to go to the NRCS and seek a wetland determination, you know, it's harvest time, before 60, 90, 180 days. It's, you have into a whole new planting season, much longer than that. And so you really need these determinations made much quicker.
Indeed. All right. That is one area. But this legislation that you said had to kind of get tweaked and finalized and agreements on, was it easier to get this one done than, say, GMO labeling or...
Yeah, well, no. Jim, here's the irony. This is an area, when you're talking about NRCS, we're talking about wetland delineation, that is somewhat, it's not unique, but it's sort of special to those of us in the prairie pothole region and in places like North Dakota, South Dakota, and western Minnesota. We understand these issues. When it comes to GMO labeling, now that's got much broader interests. As you know, there are, not just food processing and retailers and whatnot, marketers. You also, of course, have the producers, but you also have consumer groups, and you have a much bigger battleground, if you will, in dealing with that. And as I'm sure you're referencing, the Senate finally passed a compromise GMO labeling bill, and now it'll head over to the House, where we've already passed about a year ago, a voluntary labeling bill. So we'll have to reconcile some differences there.
Okay, yeah, and that'll that might take till the end of the year, do you think?
Well, it's interesting, Mick. I think there's a chance, and I'm not speaking either for me or for leadership, but I think there's a chance we could resolve this fairly quickly. The Senate bill, I call it a compromise. It's quite a compromise, and I think for those of us on the more on the commodity side and the producer side, we would say that we've given up an awful lot in this. But it was really Debbie Stabenow, the ranking Democrat in the Senate committee, that pushed this about as far as I think as she could push it in terms of a mandatory labeling. It provides like three different avenues that a company can use to provide some disclosure. But there's a clock, speaking of shot clocks, there's a clock on this one, because effective 2 days from now is the Vermont state law, which if we don't intervene in that, you could end up with 50 different state laws relating to GMO labeling, and that's what we have to get in front of and make sure that we can prevent that, because there's the interstate commerce to begin with, and there's just the complexity of one state determining for all states what a standard ought to be. So I say all that only to tell you that I think we're to a point where we've maybe gotten everything we can to get 60 votes out of the Senate. We may have to bite hard in the House and perhaps accept the Senate bill. I'm not ready to announce my support for that just yet, but I know others have. I mean, Colin Peterson has announced his support for the Senate bill, but it may just be a matter of necessity and pragmatic negotiation that brings us to that. So in which case, Mick, it could happen very quickly.
All right. As Larry the Cable Guy said, just get her done, huh?
That's it.
All right. Speaking of getting ahead of something, this morning the Obama administration issued a new rule regarding the valuation of fossil fuels and energy prices. Tell us a bit about that. Explain that one.
Sure. So one of the many bullets that the Obama administration has been trying to use in killing fossil fuels is to revalue the federally owned resources. So, they say, well, we need to provide certainty and we need to modernize our regulations. And so we're gonna add a bunch of value to the federal leases or to the federal coal and oil and gas. Well, what they've done in doing that is they've made it uneconomical for companies to recover the federal resources, which means the taxpayers will get zero instead of getting underpaid. They're going to get zero. It's really just one more attempt, Mick, at attacking fossil fuels, keeping them in the ground. killing jobs, frankly, killing our economy. The energy industry in this country has been the one bright spot in an otherwise pretty dismal economy. As you know, economic recovery has been slow to pathetic and over the last 7.5 years. We're currently producing our gross domestic product, or gross domestic product is producing at about 0.8% increase this year, which is woefully inadequate for recovery. And like I said, the bright spot's been fossil energy development. Instead of championing it and finding ways to make it better, they just keep trying to kill it. So I'm pretty outraged by it. We're going to try to stop it. I've got amendments on the Interior Appropriations Bill. We expect we'll bring the Interior Appropriations Bill up in the House sometime in July, and we'll try to put a stop to implementing that rule, and as well as some others. Representative Zinke in Montana and I have some legislation as well that we'll take just an overall look at Department of Interior policies as it relates to everything and how it relates to the economic development and jobs, job killing. So the fight wages on.
Yeah, and this as the Bakken tries to get reestablished. Hey, Kevin, you're around North Dakota this week and through the 4th of July. Where are you at?
I have been. I was spent Monday up in Minot with a number of folks, but folks largely on oil workers talking about the Bakken, how it's coming along, and what we expect in terms of recovery, talking about some legislation related to OPEC and a bill that I've introduced to create an OPEC commission to make sure that they're playing by the basic rules of fair trade. I spent Tuesday meeting with Friends of Lake Sakakawea and trying to get a better understanding of the issues surrounding the large land transfer that's being proposed by the Corps of Engineers to the Department of the Interior, about 30,000 public acres that would go into trust. And there's a lot of concern about recreational opportunities and access and things like that. So that was Tuesday, among some other things. Yesterday I was at the Farm Credit Services Board of Directors talking about ag lending and GMO labeling, imagine that, upcoming farm bill, all kinds of things. So that's what I've been doing so far this week. Spend most of my day right here in the office working on some constituent things. This is my third radio interview or radio show of the day, so yeah. I always love the opportunity to talk to the constituents and then ease into the weekend. And then when 4th of July is all over, I go back to Washington on the 5th of July.
All right. Well, I'm glad the other radio interviews warmed you up for us. So, Kevin, thanks.
They weren't nearly as good as this one, I can assure you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Hey, yes. Have a great 4th of July. And, again, thanks for the work you're doing. Have a restful next few days, Kevin.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Mick.
You're welcome. North Dakota U.S. Congressman Kevin Kramer here on Farm Talk.